This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is the Chief of Police of the City of Urbana, Illinois. Welcome, Patrick Connolly.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here in the studio with us today. We're going to be talking about the police and the community. And Chief Connolly, you've been chief here in Urbana for how long now?
A little over a year.
Just a year. Where did you come from?
Grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Eight brothers and sisters and a big Irish Catholic family.
A good Catholic family, yeah. All right.
entered the Air Force right after high school, and with always having the vision of wanting to be a police officer someplace. I was too young to be a Milwaukee police officer at that time, so I joined the Air Force, I was a law enforcement officer for just a short period of time, and then I was— In the Air Force, right, as an MP. Uh-huh. But then I was assigned as a special agent with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. So that's kind of like the best analogy would be the FBI of the Air Force. They handled the more serious crimes, the more serious investigations.
So how old were you when you were assigned to that special?
19.
19?
So, yeah, still very young, I know.
Boy, so you had to learn a lot in a hurry.
I did, and it was really, you know, I was initially stationed out in Michigan, and then when I became a special agent with OSI, I was assigned out in California.
That's called OSI?
Yes, the Office of Special Investigations. And it was really, I mean, quite honestly, I would have stayed there for 25 plus years, but I started to specialize in the narcotics arena. I was working a lot of covert narcotics operations throughout Southern California and Nevada. And I realized, and I'm no better than anybody else, but I got lucky enough to be successful at a few major cases.
Oh.
And ironically, people then from all over would be calling and asking me to come and try to have the same results in their geographic area,
so I ended up hopping around. Where did you go right then after the Air Force?
I was actually—that's what brought me here to East Central Illinois, what my ex-wife, but my wife at the time, was reassigned to Chanute Air Force Base up in Rantoul.
Oh.
And that's what brought me to Champaign-Urbana.
I see. And how many years were you then in the Air Force?
I was actually 6 years active duty— And then I remained in the Air Force as a reservist with OSI. In 2002, I was reactivated, so I actually have 7 years of active duty service. And then when I came home, I separated after 24 total years of service.
Wow.
So it's been a long career with OSI, but very, very rewarding. I really enjoyed it a great deal.
Now, as a special agent to the reserves, what would— Can you tell us, maybe if it's not secret, what sorts of things you were doing?
I did a lot of protective service details. I kind of worked in the arena where we provided the protective operations for visiting dignitaries from all over the world. So if they traveled throughout the United States, we would travel with them and abroad. So I did a lot of that work, and I continued to work in the narcotics arena as a reservist with OSI as well. I could work in the reserves. It's 24 days out of the year, so they were able to work with schedules, and I could go for details where I would, for instance, be brought into an event for a couple weeks, and then I would be removed from that situation. So during that time period, I was able to establish who was responsible for selling the drugs and whatnot, and then I would try to purchase from them.
Oh.
Kind of a exciting career, yeah.
Wow. Now, when you were in the reserves, you also had another police officer job, right, somewhere?
I did. I started in 88 when I came— we started with the Urbana Police Department in 88, but 4 years prior to that, I was a probation officer with Champaign County.
Oh.
In 1984, there was a brand new program in Illinois referred to as Intensive Probation Supervision, IPS. And Intensive Probation Supervision was designed to ease the prison overcrowding situation.
Which is still terrible.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it was certainly at that time, it was an incredible problem. So the state was trying to identify and I use this term loosely, but the cream of the crop felons, the nonviolent offenders, the check writers, the forgers, those types of folks who repeatedly have been involved in the criminal justice system, and they were going to create a community-based program under very stringent guidelines, four pages actually of compliance, where my job as a surveillance officer was to ensure that they were complying with these four pages of rules that the judge established. You know, curfews at night, urine drops to ensure that they weren't using drugs or alcohol, all those kinds of issues. And I did that. Now, unfortunately, the cream of the crop felons were not really the ones going to prison. So we've learned very quickly that almost 98% of the people that were involved, there were the program was designed so that there were 40 adult felony offenders that could be on our program at any given time. And of those 40 offenders, I would venture to say that at least 90% of them were involved in the distribution of controlled substances or cannabis.
Interesting.
So I did that for 2 years as a surveillance officer. I became the supervisor of the unit for 2 years. And then in 88, that's when I made the decision to move to the Urbana Police Department.
And what have you done before becoming chief this last year?
I literally touched every office in the police department. I started as a patrolman. Worked in the uniform division, so I drove a squad car and I responded to 911 calls. Because of my past training and experience with OSI, at that time, and still to this day, the police agencies don't have enough manpower so that each one of the agencies in our jurisdiction can have their own, for instance, homicide unit and drug unit.
So you share, burglary. You cooperate.
Exactly. Through a collaborative effort, we work with all the local police agencies and we pool our resources. At that time, Captain Walt Wolf from the Sheriff's Office was running the drug unit for Champaign County, and I was assigned to that unit. So myself and another police officer from Urbana represented Urbana for the Area Drug Task Force. Now, the Illinois State Police wasn't involved at that time, but Urbana, Champaign, the county, Rantoul, University of Illinois Police, Mahomet, all those agencies provided an officer or two, and then collectively we were responsible for the street-level suppression of all the drugs within Champaign County. I did that for about 2 years. Absolutely a great program. But then the first Desert Storm hit. Several of our folks who were in the Garden Reserve were called to active duty, which created a manpower shortage for the police department. So they brought me back to the police department, and I was assigned to, because of my past investigative experience, I was assigned to the Criminal Investigations Division. So as I said earlier, in the police department of our size, we don't have the luxury of being able to specialize just to one area like burglary or homicide. So we kind of, as a general criminal investigator, we either were responsible for conducting any of those types of crimes up to sexual assaults and very serious offenses to a series of burglaries and those kind of things that required a great deal of attention. Then we also had juvenile police officers, juvenile detectives, because of the unique responsibilities of those folks, they were specially trained. So I was a general criminal investigator for 2 years, and then I became a juvenile investigator, which was interesting, very interesting, quite frankly.
So just in what you've covered so far in describing your career before you became chief of police at Urbana, Illinois, you've really been in touch with a lot of different segments of the society and people who have a lot of varied problems.
Yeah, I certainly have. And that's, you know, that's always been something that I've cherished throughout my career. I've always enjoyed working with people. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more rewarding than to be able to help someone get through a traumatic experience and actually provide some closure to whatever they're facing. And that was one of the things that I really, each segment of my police career, something else really was rewarding. And as a patrolman, I was able to help with almost immediate problems, you know, something as simple as a broken car where we could get them home or get them a place to stay, to working in the homicide division or working a crime that involved the death of someone in their family and being able to to bring closure to that death.
Oh.
So it's been, you know, I think a lot of people have, I have touched a lot of people and they've touched me.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Chief of Police Patrick Connolly from Urbana, Illinois. Of course, this is a live call-in show, so I'd like to invite listeners to give us a call, ask a question of the chief, make a comment, raise an issue if you'd like to hear him discuss it. Of course, there are limits to what he could discuss as a public officer, but do give us a chance. The numbers to call if you're in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. If you're listening long distance, including people who are listening on the Internet, you may call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. So a long-distance call, 1-800-222-WILL. If it's local, 333-WILL-9455. I'm Steve Shoemaker, your usual host, and I'll do my best to ask some good questions to the chief, but we're happy to have you join in as listeners. And of course, this program will be archived. If you can't hear it all live, do go to our website, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and leave the G off of keeping. We're very informal, and you'll you can hear these programs at your convenience on many different kinds of devices. Computers and cell phones and iPads and all those things. Well, getting back to Chief Connolly, you were talking about helping people when there's been a real tragedy, a death, and you told me as you came in today you'd just been to a funeral that was of a fireman, right? A volunteer fireman?
Right. Actually, I went to his wake. The funeral is tomorrow. I went to his wake. All of the first responders are like a family in this community.
Sure.
And I was I read in the paper the other day about the tragic loss of this young man, and I just felt compelled to represent the
police department. He was like 21, right?
He was indeed, yeah. An Eagle Scout, you know, a state wrestling champ. It was just touching, and I felt compelled to go. We work very closely with firefighters and paramedics in our community, and when someone is lost, all of us are touched by that.
Uh-huh. Now, because of that, coming directly from that wake, you're wearing your uniform. Let me, someone who's ignorant of these things, ask about what some of the things mean on your uniform. Now, I see three stripes on a sleeve and three stars on collars. What does that mean?
Well, traditionally in the police ranks, three stars represents the chief of police, and the three stripes also represent that. You'll see on my left arm, I also have four stripes. That's for every 5 years of service.
Okay.
Now, at the Urbana Police Department, the police chief, structurally, the police chief and then the assistant chief and then three lieutenants comprise the management team.
Okay.
That's the upper management. So the police chief wears three stars and the three bands on the gold bands on the sleeve represent the same thing. The assistant chief wears two stars, right, and lieutenants wear one.
Huh.
So you would see our patrol division lieutenants and our criminal investigation lieutenant in their Class A uniform.
I see.
For the Urbana Police, the only folks that wear Class A uniforms like this, the dress uniform with the blouse, are the upper management.
Uh-huh.
The police officers, the sergeants, they wear three stripes on their sleeve, chevrons, and on their collar, and those are the first line supervisors. And then you have patrolmen, the folks in the blue suits, uniforms,
sure,
with the exposed gun belts. Those are the guys and gals that drive the police cars and respond to the 911 calls.
Okay.
We have two other divisions within our police department that wear soft clothes or suit business attire on certain occasions, in jeans and a T-shirt on others.
Okay.
That's our Criminal Investigations Division.
Uh-huh.
That's Lieutenant Brian Serafin oversees that, and then he has a sergeant and then six detectives who are responsible for working all of the major crimes that occur in the city.
Uh-huh.
And then we also have a school resource officer assigned to them who's a detective by the name of Tim McNaught, and he works a majority of time working through the school system. The other folks that are in soft clothes or civilian attire are our street crimes unit. And our street crimes unit really address any significant problem that pops up. I'm sure for some of the listeners or readers in our community, you couldn't help but notice that in Southeast Urbana for a period of time, we were inundated with a huge increase in the number of crimes in that particular neighborhood.
Right.
And there were a number of factors involved in that, but it all started with a murder that occurred there in February of this year, and the crime pattern continued to climb as a result of that. Our street crimes folks, along with our detectives, were responsible for addressing that problem almost with an omnipresence of police. They were down there all the time addressing.
Now, how many total officers do you have, everybody at all levels?
We have 55 total police.
55.
And that includes me, Anthony Cobb, the assistant chief, and all the lieutenants.
And so, people are on, what, three shifts a day?
They are on three shifts a day. We work 12-hour shifts. Now, in the patrol division, we work 12-hour shifts. So 7 in the morning till 7 at night, they will work for 2 days, and then they're off for 2 days.
Okay.
Then we have an overlap shift from 3 in the afternoon till 3 in the morning, and then we have a night shift of 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Oh.
The city is actually broken into 5 geographic beats, so we have squad cars that are assigned to these 5 geographic locations. Sometimes there's 2 cars per beat, other times there's 1 car, and then we overlap that also with cars that roam throughout the city.
Now, your situation in Urbana as chief of police, I'm guessing, is very different from a lot of places because you're so close to the University of Illinois, and they have their department,
right,
and you're so close to Champaign, and they have their department, plus the county sort of surrounds you, and they have the county sheriff and deputies and so on.
Right.
So you're able to cooperate when there's an emergency with all these groups, or how does that work?
Well, we have an agreement, a signed agreement, that allows any police officer in Champaign County to have arrest authority anywhere in the county.
Okay.
But I've often said, quite honestly, we should be wearing a University of Illinois police patch on our right sleeve and a Champaign County patch on our others, because it's amazing how literally every single night we require their assistance to help us out with calls for service or other problems. The Champaign Police Department is much larger than ours, twice as large as ours, and they have a lot of job responsibilities in Champaign just to address their needs. So we don't draw on them as often, but yet the other morning we had, if you saw in the news, we had a barricaded situation up in the 900 block of North Broadway, and immediately Champaign officers came to assist us with that as well. But routinely, the University of Illinois Police and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, and to a lesser extent, the Rantoul Police, work with us literally all the time.
Now, we're talking today on Keeping the Faith about the police in relation to the community, specifically in your case with Urbana, of course, which is what you know best. But let's say an Urbana citizen calls 911. Who answers? What happens? How does that get to the right place?
Well, that's a good question, and it's one that is often asked by a lot of folks. And the 911 center is actually separate from any of the police agencies. It's located on the east side of town, and it also handles all the 911 calls, all the non-emergency numbers, as well as all the fire dispatching. And the MedCAD dispatching center actually will filter all of those calls for us. So when a person calls 911, because of the enhanced electronics that we have in our community, the person, the operator handling that call, will actually, in most situations, be able to see whether it's a call from Champaign or Urbana or from the county. But with cell phones being used constantly today, one of the first questions they ask is, where are you calling from?
Sure.
So when someone calls and asks for the police, the first question that is asked is, where are you calling from? And then from there, the call taker will, and I don't want to speak for MedCAD because it's a separate entity, but
right,
I've been out there. They've been incredible to work with, and they've been very, very helpful in trying to minimize the calls that we have to respond to by way of keeping it in geographic locations. So if a call is close to a particular Urbana officer, they have an avenue of being able to determine that, and then they'll send that closest car.
Now, when you and I first met, and I might explain how we met, I'd been arrested, and I'm teasing. We met because we're both mentors in the Urbana Middle School. Now, why, as chief of police, are you a mentor to a kid in the Urbana Middle School?
Well, I'll tell you, actually, it's almost tradition. Chief Eddie Adair was the chief of police, two chiefs prior to me, and Eddie Adair mentored for years during his stay. Eddie came from Memphis and was our police chief for, my goodness, almost 10 years. Mike Beely was the assistant chief of police at that time, and Mike also mentored, and when Mike became the chief of police, I became the assistant chief, and Mike mentored at the school. And the day that I got promoted to, or the mayor selected me as the chief of police, Mike Beely made it a point to call me and say, you have to carry the tradition on. And I actually, it's been an incredible journey for me. I've done it now. I'm on my second year, and it's been really rewarding to be able to get a chance to do that. I work with a great kid. I'm amazed at the middle school staff and the people over there who really have the structure down to a science. They're so warm with the kids. Every time I go there, I just smile and say, this is the way a school needs to work. So I liked working the mentorship program. I'm going to continue doing that, hopefully long after I retire as the police chief, because it really is rewarding.
So that's one of the efforts you make to see what life is like for young people in this case and their families in a situation where they're not in trouble. They're going about their normal business. And of course, middle school kids can get into little troubles or big troubles. And that's a sensitive age. And
yeah,
it's so important that they have some good role models there. And so I think we both can encourage listeners. Boy, sign up to be a mentor. The program is called One to One in Champaign-Urbana. There's that program. There are other mentoring programs as well. But this is one that both Chief Patrick Connolly and I are involved with. And I've been doing it for 6 years now and can just highly recommend it. You spend 1 hour a week. It's not a huge amount of your time. It's in the school, so you're under the supervision of the teachers and principals and security and all the folks that are there. And it's, you have to be, they're careful who they select as mentors.
Yeah.
I'm a minister. I've been in the community basically all my life, grew up here, but I had to be fingerprinted. They had to do a background check on me before they allowed me to be a mentor for one of the kids. And I, of course, approve of that because you want to be careful with this kind of situation. But it's worth the effort. And would you also encourage people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are several other police officers. Anthony Cobb, the assistant chief, is a mentor and has been for 8 years. He's done an incredible job. Tim McNutt, our school resource officer. We have a number of officers in the police department that participate in the mentorship program, and I would encourage everybody to be a part of it. I'll tell you, it's really... What I find is it doesn't only help them, it really helps you.
Sure.
It gives you an opportunity to just give back to the community.
Well, let's share a little bit of what happens during that hour. For example, with the young man I work with, sometimes we'll do a little reading together because I'm not a tutor, but it helps him to read aloud. It helps him to hear me read aloud. He hears some words said different ways than he's used to hearing them. And things I pick to have him read are different than he might choose for himself.
Uh-huh.
And but then we'll play a game, or we'll go to the gym and play basketball.
Right.
Or we'll play table tennis. And what do they call that room?
Foosball.
The splash room or
yeah.
Foosball.
Right. And I do the same thing. It looks like we do the same things. I go on Tuesdays. But...
Okay. I've taken in tools to say, okay, here's some tools that I use working around the house. Have you ever used a wrench? Have you ever used a crescent wrench? Have you ever, what would this strange thing be called or used for?
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. I showed him my motorcycle one time because you could walk around the school grounds as well as stay in the school.
Right.
We didn't ride it, but we talked about it,
Yeah. Well, my mentee is very interested in becoming either a police officer and a member of the military. Now, this passion of his was long before I even started working with him, but that's why Barb... the coordinator assigned,
Barbara Lindner,
right,
yes.
assigned me to him because we had some common things that we at least seemed to enjoy. So every conversation, the hour goes so quickly that we honestly look at each other and say, can you believe it's done already?
Yeah.
And we do the same thing. We play basketball. We go to the splash room and play foosball and air hockey. And then you just talk. And and it's amazing how quickly that goes and how by the end of the day you learn a lot about yourself as
well. And you can get into a lot of important issues for that kid pretty easily. That reminds me, Barbara Lindner, the director of the program Urbana in the middle school, was a guest on this program prior to this. So if you'd like to hear that interview, do go to our website, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. You'll see a little search box there. Put in Lindner, L-I-N-D-N-E-R, and her name will pop up, and you can hear that interview at your convenience. We're talking today with Chief of Police of Urbana, Patrick J. Connolly, that's spelled C-O-N-N-O-L-L-Y. He described himself earlier as a good Irish Catholic family. Chief Connolly, one way you've been trying to be involved in the community, again, rather than just dealing with people in trouble, is you've been doing a rather strange thing on weekends. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, many years ago, I often thought, if I were ever king for a day, who would have ever guessed that that day now comes, and I'm in a position where I can actually do something about that dream. But many, many years ago, I often thought, if I were ever the chief of police somewhere, the first thing I would try to do is get to meet the community by attending a different church each Sunday. And when I became the chief, I thought about that. And first, I did a bit of research, and I would have never guessed that there were 50-some churches just in the city of Urbana. But Cassie Heldman, I have to mention her. She's my administrative assistant who's just like a godsend to me. She keeps everything organized for me. Kind of put together a spreadsheet and said, here are the different churches. Now we had to, it's amazing because you can go to so many sources for the different churches in our community. And some of them are redundant and others are obsolete. But so we put together this list of 50-some places. And I started calling them before I came and I introduced myself. And I found very quickly that and it was all well-intended, but they would say, you know, we really don't want you to come today. We would prefer that you come when we have this big social event.
Oh, a special thing.
And that way you can get to see us.
And
that wasn't the purpose of this. The purpose was for me to be able to go and introduce myself to the different members of our community.
Informally.
Now, I did wear a uniform only because I wanted them to know that I was the police chief.
Sure.
And I wasn't asking to speak, but I was absolutely amazed at the number of reverends and people in charge. And I went from churches that had 11 members in a mall to, you know, 60 members in an old bank, to a variety of other churches. It's just been an absolutely fascinating ride. Now, I haven't gone every Sunday because my dad has been ill. He lives up in Milwaukee still, so there were certainly occasions where I would have to go there, or I would go out of town on business for weekends. So it hasn't been one entire year stretch.
How many have you visited so far, roughly?
I'm on 38.
38?
38 today with St. Patrick's, as a matter of fact. Right.
So you went to a Catholic church, so you were familiar with what went on there.
I was, although, you know, surprisingly enough, just in during Lent, they changed. It's amazing how you can reduce to memory almost every prayer and every tradition that you go through in reciting different responses throughout the church. And so during Lent, some subtle changes so that it was printed on the book.
But this is Advent now, so you
are Advent, my fault.
so there, some things were a little different.
A little different, I had to repeatedly refer to the book, which I prided myself on not having to do. Other churches and locations that I've been to, certainly I'm not familiar with any of the traditions. I had to ask ahead of time whether I should or should not accept communion, all those kinds of things.
Right.
I'll tell you, it's been a fascinating ride because the reverend, everybody who has ever greeted me at every one of the doors has made me feel so incredibly welcome. It's not as though I'm going to get to my 50th church and then say, okay, I've fulfilled that
right.
mission in life and now I'm done, it's going to be something that as long as I'm the chief, I'm going to continue doing because I enjoy it that much.
Right. So in the city of Urbana, there is not a synagogue or Jewish temple, but many people in Urbana who are Jews of various stripes go either to Sinai Temple in Champaign or the Hillel Center for Jewish Life on campus, where they have both Reform services, conservative services, Orthodox services. So you'll probably want to visit those as well on some Friday night or Saturday morning. And of course, there's a mosque in Urbana,
right,
where Muslims worship on Friday noons. The big service is on Friday noons, so that's also one you can walk in. And it's interesting. It's been interesting to me because I've done a similar thing. My degree sort of field is religion as well as my personal commitment as a pastor, but. I was teaching a course at Ali for retired folks about the different religions in the world and what they might have in common, what their major differences were, that sort of thing. So in 8 weeks, I had to try to cover a lot of religions, a lot of faiths. And as a result, I visited places. And I've been a curious sort, so I've been doing that over the years anyway. But because of this program, I've gotten to interview, for 13 years, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews, Hindus, whatever, and to learn about what the local examples of those groups are. Like the Hindus in town don't have a temple yet, but they've bought the land for it.
Uh-huh.
And they're hoping to build one soon. They're raising money. But it's fascinating to me how open people are of all these different faiths to a visitor, to somebody who just comes and says, I'd kind of like to see what you do. May I sit in on this? I don't know quite how to even to sit in some cases, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
They'll often say, sit by me and, do what I do, or you could do this much, but just watch me do this.
And that's what most of the folks, as you go through this, there are many similarities in most of the... certainly in the Southern Baptist churches, those types of churches, I see very many similarities. Huh. And then the Protestant churches are somewhat close to the Catholics in many respects. So I've seen a lot of similarities, but yet there is always someone that seems to want to take you by the arm and just make sure that you feel comfortable there, which I really appreciated because I certainly wouldn't want to offend anybody by taking communion, for instance, when you shouldn't, or vice versa. So,
now, when you mentioned to me before we went on the air that you and your family are members at St. John's Church on campus.
Yeah.
Right.
Many years ago, I started going there just because I really enjoyed the energy of the students, and we've just kind of landed there and stayed there.
Uh-huh. And that's a very vibrant community. I hope to interview some of the sisters from there, their campus ministry, this next year. I met some of them just recently, and so I hope that happens. We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program. Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Patrick J. Connolly, Chief of Police in the city of Urbana, Illinois. If you have a question or comment for the chief, do give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. And that's true even if you're listening online to our simulcast at will.illinois.edu/am. You may be listening on your computer, but do use that toll-free number if you'd like to call anywhere in the continental U.S. And of course, if you miss part of this program, you can go to that same website, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and you can see all of our programs over the last many years and make your choice as to what to hear when at your convenience. Again, I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for the program. Next week, I'll be talking with, I'll be gone the next 2 weeks. I'll be traveling. We're playing two archive programs. Because of the current news that you've heard about this week about a national program having to do with laws about cell phone use when you're driving, I thought it'd be good to replay a program from 2007 an interview with David Eisenman, who had a very interesting proposal. And so we'll be playing that Christmas Day, believe it or not. So the evening of December 25th next week at 5 o'clock, you can hear that program. Or again, online, you can hear it at your convenience about his suggestions. He has a modest proposal for what that law should be like, one that might actually get passed. Many places have passed laws like the city of Chicago that don't get enforced because people don't follow, don't do it. Others have failed in trying to get any law passed. So he has a modest proposal that I think is still relevant. So we'll be replaying that December 25th. And, Chief, we might discuss that a little bit later, in the last half of the program. The following week will be another archive program. We'll be replaying a program from last spring about the new translation of the Bible into English called the Common English Bible, with two folks who were involved in that translation, one from Chicago and one from California. And so that'll be replayed on January 1st. The next live program will be January 8th. We'll be talking with Mike Conklin from DePaul University about a mission to Tanzania. He was a part of in Africa, a very interesting program. January 15th, Nancy Branch will be our guest talking about, and this is a great title, The Devil's Brew, Wealth, Power, and Inequality in America Today. So that'll be January 15th. January 22nd, Rabbi Rogerio Kukeman from the Hillel Foundation and the Center for Jewish Life on the U of I campus will be our guest. That's January 22nd. Well, we have a caller waiting on line one. You've been waiting patiently. Thank you very much. You're on the air with our guest, Patrick Connolly.
Hi. I'm a member of Wesley United Methodist Church on campus, and you are always welcome. We also have a social action ministry there who's concerned with the 99%. On my own as an individual, I'm involved with the Occupy CU movement. We want a good relationship with the police as we go along with our projects. And so I'm asking you if you have any suggestions for us. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate the call. Any response?
Absolutely. My suggestion would be wherever Occupy Champaign plans to hold a rally, if it's in the city of Urbana, I would welcome you to give me a call, and we can make arrangements to sit down and meet, and we can talk about what we can do to help facilitate that, because I can tell you that I would be more than willing to make sure that we don't start seeing some of the problems we see throughout the rest of the country. And I would encourage anybody interested in that to give me, I'll give you my direct line is 384-2331. And you give me a ring, we will sit down and have coffee someplace, figure out what it is we can do to help organize this and make sure that everybody is safe. And I would be more than willing to be a part of that.
Let me repeat that phone number. Chief Connolly has given his direct line to his office, which is 217-384-2331. That's 384-2331. Thank you for sharing that. Another way you're making yourself available to the community in advance.
Absolutely. Sort of. And, you know, so often people, unfortunately, when they plan these types of events, get the police involved at the very end, and then by then we're not able to really help out as much as we could. And we've always asked, and when I say we, I'm talking on behalf of the sheriff's office and all the local police chiefs, that if there is, in fact, an event that's coming up, we ask that you give us a call so that we can try to sit down and work together with it to minimize any potential problems before we experience them.
Now, I had an example of that this afternoon, and I'd like your reaction to this.
Sure.
I sing with a community choir called The Chorale. There are about 70 of us, and it was suggested that we do something that one of the big choirs in Utah recently did, which was to show up at a shopping center unannounced. And I think this is called a flash mob.
It is,
and
yeah.
You just show up and you sing a couple songs,
right,
and people are surprised and happy and may sing along. But the choir director asked us to kind of try to blend in with the shoppers. Well, I'm 6'8" tall.
Uh-huh.
I don't blend. So I thought, how could I sort of not be noticed in a big shopping mall the last one of the last shopping days before Christmas? So I wore blue jeans, a jean shirt, a Chicago Cubs baseball hat, had on my work gloves, and I was pushing a mop, a big mop. So I just sort of went around the edges of the mall with my big mop. So, and I was inconspicuous for a while, but then the mall security said, "Oh, this guy isn't wearing our uniform.
Uh-huh.
He's this. What's he doing here?" So suddenly I have this officer come over in his uniform saying, "Excuse me, you're not a custodian here, are you?" That's why I had to say, "Well, I'm with this choir and we're going to sing right here in about 10 minutes. I'm just trying to blend in." And he said, "Well, just hold your mop up. Don't keep it on the floor. Somebody might trip on it." He was very agreeable once he knew what I was doing. But I might have been a crazy person. I might have been, you know, someone who had issues, and he didn't know. So he was doing his job.
Right.
But what about flash mobs? Do they drive you nuts, or?
Well, it depends on the definition. You know,
what
context the definition is. A true flash mob, I'll tell you, one of the best things and I don't know.
YouTube? Sure.
YouTube is,
sure.
You know, the Alleluia. I think it was a mall in Canada in a food court. It almost brings tears to your eyes. It was just a beautiful rendition of
so
that.
So lovely.
Just great.
Handle, right? They did there.
Right.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, we have also had problems in our own community where a local gas station at 2:00 in the morning is literally overrun with 100 or so people, participants who just help themselves to the shelf.
Oh, boy.
Of all of the materials, and
they're stealing.
They're stealing, and that creates an enormous problem for
sure.
The police. So when sure. People say, "What are your thoughts about flash mobs?" It's used in such a broad context.
It varies a lot.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would love to be in the mall when I heard that group of 70 singing that
Joy
song.
To the world, yeah.
However, especially
let there be peace on earth.
Absolutely, because I love Christmas music, but I certainly wouldn't want to have to deal with the other type of flash mob that's been experienced.
Which is now possible because of technology. So how do police keep up with things like this?
Yeah.
How do you deal with a community where that now is possible?
Well, again, a lot of our work is pre-planned. It's because we have seen patterns of behavior throughout the country in the Midwest, we would educate those people at those businesses to either keep the door locked and work off the window or keep people within. And as soon as they see two or more people arrive, that they give us a call and give us a heads up. Oftentimes, we're able to intervene with an omnipresence of police. But sometimes in certainly other parts of the country, an entire store is wiped out.
When I was on the county board for a while, I took a ride along with the county sheriff with one of the deputies just to see what it was like at night. I'm not usually up at that time of night wandering around the county. And I was amazed at how many people are and how many of them sort of get into trouble or they're looking for trouble. And of course, under the influence of alcohol and other issues. But you said earlier, sort of off the cuff, at night, and there's that old ancient Jewish phrase about the wicked do evil, the wicked, what is it about it, at night because their deeds are evil. I can't quite quote it exactly. But there is something about the night, isn't there, that
Well, unfortunately,
gives people ideas.
Most of the times that the police intervene, there's alcohol involved. There's a tendency to people drink a little as the night progresses. Oh. Certainly, hopefully we don't encounter that too often at 10 or 11 in the morning. But there are occasions when that happens as well. But when more alcohol is involved, there's a tendency for people to become a little bit braver and do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do, illegal activity, that is. And those are certainly some issues that, you know, we are aware of and we try to deal with. And that's why, as I said earlier, I think it's so important that we try at the Urbana Police, and I will say the University of Illinois and the Sheriff's Office and Champaign, try to have a visible police presence in those areas, the bar areas, so that if someone is thinking about improper behavior, they're going to see a police officer and they're going to realize maybe that's not the best decision to make.
What are your hopes in terms of, as chief of police in the city of Urbana, dealing with concerns of particularly racial minorities and they're concerned about being stopped more often because they're a minority or treated differently. What do you try to do about that?
Well, one of the things, Steve, you already mentioned, and that is I would encourage any of your listeners, anybody who lives anywhere in the Champaign-Urbana area, to contact me and make arrangements to do a ride-along. Because oftentimes the perception of a lot of people are a lot different than the reality. And if they hopped inside of a squad car and rode with our police officers just for a few hours on any given evening, they would see the realities of policing. And it's not as easy. It's not that TV cop stuff that you see that's, you know, 90% fast-paced and
exciting.
Everybody's, yeah. There's a whole lot of, the police have to engage with the community, and we do, and I'm very proud to say that the Urbana Police does a really good job of doing that. They get out and walk and talk to the business owners, and they get out and talk to the people in the neighborhoods. But I would encourage people who have any questions or issues to come and see for themselves and do a ride along with us. We just finished a program every year, and I'm proud to say that I participated in this since the inception of it, is the Shop with a Cop program. In the Shop with a Cop program, we identify underprivileged or needy kids within the community who are, and this year, last couple of years actually, in particular, we've unfortunately had to turn away a whole lot of folks who were just having a tough time because of the economic situation in our country. And we try to bring them along with us. We have helpers. In fact, my daughter, Katie, has helped me for the last 14 years. But you get an opportunity to work with kids and their families. I go and introduce myself. I normally have five kids, and I'm typically a mom who comes with us. And then I get helpers, and we get a certain amount of money designated to be able to purchase clothes that are needed and boots, and then some toys that they want to make it a more memorable Christmas for them. And it's designed to be able to show kids, other than when the police have to come and deal with the domestic violence or deal with the problems involving alcoholism or deal with, unfortunately, all the negative connotations that the police are oftentimes faced or the kids are faced when they encounter the police. So this is a positive interaction. And I have loved doing it for the last 14 years. And
where does the money come from?
Actually, donations from our Fraternal Order of Police, FOP Lodge 70, is where folks donate the money. And then the police officers volunteer their time. The volunteers volunteer their time. The last couple years, Lex, the bus service, has provided transportation to us. We shop at Farm and Fleet, where they give us a reduced rate.
Oh, great.
The people who are out there shopping, you just look at their faces when these buses pull up. And it's, you know, they're shocked to see all these police walking in with these kids. And there's cookies, you know, the staff there. Everybody goes out of their way to help with that project. And we run it on two different nights because of the number of folks involved. And it's been incredibly, you know,
How many people will be helped?
I think this year there were 70 kids and 30, comprised of 35 families, but I don't know those numbers exactly.
Okay.
Dwayne Smith actually oversees that for us, Sergeant Smith, and he's done an incredible job working with the different agencies. We get social service agencies, the school call, and they provide names to us of the needy kids.
Right.
And then from there, we make sure that everybody gets a fair shake, so those that have participated in the past are not eligible again until we can get everybody else through it. But it's a real rewarding program.
You mentioned the people donate money for that cause, Friends of Police Lodge 70. I get a lot of calls from a lot of different groups claiming to represent different police groups. And I don't know how to judge which ones are legitimate and which ones the callers are making most of the money. The police get practically nothing.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And all I can tell you is that we've been very, very lucky to have the organization that we've worked with for years that has done an incredible job of making sure that the money is there for the kids.
Okay. We have another caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with Chief of Police Patrick Connolly from Urbana.
Hi there. I think the question that started this discussion on Christmas was on racial minorities. And I've ridden with the police, and I am very aware that Urbana police officers are. I mean, I did a Friday night, and it was very involved, especially with students. But I just want to follow up. When it comes to immigrants, I think, Chief, you were there for the immigration forum, and you got to hear about secure communities. Can you tell us what your thoughts are on the Obama police, the laws of Urbana when it comes to immigrants, and, you know, legal immigrants, too? I mean, secure communities involves everyone. And then...
Could you say a couple more words? Could you say a couple more words about what secure communities are? Because some listeners won't know.
Yeah, it's a federal program that originally was intended to apprehend and deport criminal aliens, but...
illegal aliens.
The national, when they're arrested, they have a criminal record. But nationally as well as locally, the information we have is that it actually will pick up people from, 70% of those picked up and deported are not criminal. You know, it's traffic violations or anything else but criminal. And so we're just, a group of us have been working on documenting what's happening and then see what law enforcement can do to not follow a program that is actually miscreating or not doing secure communities, but instead doing insecure communities because of the lack of trust.
Any response, Chief?
Yes, I actually did attend. There was a forum at the Champaign Public Library to address the issue of secure communities, and Captain Alan Jones from the Sheriff's Office represented Sheriff Walsh at that event because Alan actually oversees the jail. I went because I'm certainly interested in what the community's concerns are, and I also thought that if given an opportunity, I could explain that just the structure of how the taking of someone into custody actually works, because the police department in the old days had actually a jail cell in their building. Those days are long gone, and anyone who was arrested in the Urbana police by the Urbana police are transported directly to the Champaign County Jail and out on Learman, and it's central processing. So they do all of our fingerprints for us. They do all of our booking and whatnot. So there were some misconceptions that the Urbana Police Department were identifying illegal immigrants and tagging them to be processed through the safe or secure communities process. But that's the reality is that when secure communities, which was designed by the federal, by ICE, the immigration folks, to identify purportedly when its original design was to identify the worst of the worst, you know, the criminal violators who were illegally in our country. Yeah. And if they were picked up for any reason, for instance, if they were responsible for a bank robbery or they were good for a sexual assault or some heinous crime, they were identified through their fingerprints, and they were then to be deported as a result of this. That. Now, that was the original intent of secure communities. As the process evolved, it's my understanding, and I have limited knowledge about it, to be honest with you, because it really has no impact on the Urbana police other than the fact that we're part of the community. But the Urbana police don't identify. We don't even know whether the person is considered to be a legal or illegal representative of the United States. All we know is whether or not they have a driver's license or they were arrested for a particular event, those types of things. And what the caller, I think, was alluding to was these people weren't being deported because of their violent criminal behavior. They were arrested for a car accident, and they didn't have a driver's license.
So you're not arresting people by their appearance or by their race or by their country of origin. But if someone is arrested, you're saying you just by your procedures take them to the Champaign County Jail, and there they may be found to be here illegally.
Correct. And interestingly enough,
without papers or whatever it is.
Right, and that's something that the police department never learns, nor is it involved in the Urbana police. But interestingly enough, the I heard a number of folks speak that night on the president's addressing the issue, Governor Quinn is addressing the issue. And I think if people are going to try to get this issue resolved concerning secure communities, it should be addressed at that level because it is a federal event. So that would be my recommendation, is that people focus their attention, because quite frankly, the Urbana Police, I don't have any the authority to do anything for that. I do have the authority to work with the folks in our community. And that's why earlier when I said, feel free to come and ride with us, oftentimes they say you made a traffic stop because he was a Latino. Come and see how the police department functions. And first of all, you'll see that 99% of the time, you won't be able to determine whether it's a male, a female, a black or white inside that car. All you're doing is seeing the activity that requires us to stop them.
We're down to our last minute or so. Any hopes for what you can accomplish in terms of your relationship personally as chief of police with the Urbana community?
Well, I think we have a good start. I love working. I have to say, every business, every organization that I go to and speak with, every community group, it's such a warm welcome, and they're so giving that all I can say is I hope we can continue to work in that light. I'm certainly willing to work with anybody, as the first caller who said, look, we're starting a process. We want to get on the ground level with the police. I encourage them to work with us early so that we get an opportunity to resolve problems at their lowest level.
I appreciate very much your being on Keeping the Faith. We've been talking tonight with the Chief of Police of Urbana, Illinois, Patrick J. Connolly. He's been very kind to give our listeners his direct number. I'll repeat it now. If you have a question or call or want to set up a ride-along, if you have an issue you'd like to discuss with the chief, it's 217-384-2331. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, we'll be playing an archive program dealing with cell phone use. I'm sorry, Chief, we didn't get your response to people using cell phones in cars. Should they do it?
No, very, very dangerous.
I do it a lot.
I do as well, unfortunately.
I know. His suggestion, you'll have to tune in next week at 5 to 6 on Keeping the Faith here on WILL AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD3 to hear that program. It's an archive program from 07. He has a modest suggestion for a new law on how to deal with cell phone use in the roadways. And he's concerned with people on bicycles and walking, talking on phones and so forth and other devices. So interesting program. We'll be playing it again next week. And then January 1st, an archive program on the Common English Bible, a brand new translation in English that's just out. From DePaul University, Mike Conklin, professor there on mission to Tanzania on January 8th. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.